Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello there. This is John Doe. Please tune in to Pamela DeBar's Pajama Party. It's so many peas, you'll pee your pants.
Welcome to Pamela DeBar's Pajama Party, a Pantheon podcast. Music. Culture. Conversation,
tambourine man, play a song for me.
And good old-fashioned rock and roll. So now, I give you Miss Pamela and her pajama party.
Hello, dolls, and welcome to Pamela DeBar's pajama party. Today I have a friend on. I'm very happy. I've been trying to get Sin Curran on my show for as many since I've had a show, and he's finally able to come by, and he's coming to my house. We're going to sit on the couch and have a wonderful chat. He was in ministry, the industrial band, actually the founding, and I mean they invented industrial music. He was with that band for 15 years, and he co-wrote a lot of the songs, or just wrote a lot of the songs, with the wild man Al Jorgensen. And he's got some incredible stories. He has a brand new band. So I'm very excited to bring you guys Sin Curran. I'm very thrilled today to welcome Sin Curran, and I'm very thrilled. You know, I've been trying to get him to my house for how long now?
Years. It's been years.
And there's been a few times you almost arrived.
Yeah. But I'm here. I'm honored to be here.
Well, I'm really thrilled to have you. Where did we meet the first time? You were in ministry, I believe.
Yes, I believe we met. Was it at... I don't even think that the Nokia
theater. Well, I went to the Nokia to see you, but I thought I met you before.
House of Blues?
Probably. I met you with Al.
Yeah. Oh, and then we also, I think it was the House of Blues we might have met, but we also met at, there was a talk about a movie that was going to be made called The Bridge. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
This director,
we
Bobby,
be in
and,
it.
And we met up there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was, we're going on over 10 years now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Sin has been in many bands, but he's mainly remembered, 15 years in ministry.
Yeah.
Which is the most powerful and most original industrial band in the world.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's funny, because I used to listen to ministry when I was in high school.
Yeah.
And, I remember going to some of my first early bands rehearsals,
Yeah.
And I'd be driving there and I'd have ministry cassettes in my car. And I remember getting there and talking to the guys and just being like, listen to this band. Like, this is what these guys are doing.
Yeah.
Well, and then fast forward, years later, and I end up in the band.
And
it's surreal.
I know. How did that take place?
Well, I was in another band called Society One, based here in LA, and we had the same booking agent, and one of our old bassists were the same. I think it must have been around early 2000s, I actually met Al, And
what a character.
Oh my god.
There's no one like Al Jorgensen. There's no one like him. Okay?
Complete original written. And and so I met him, and he's just like looking at me, and he's like, "So I hear you play guitar." And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Okay, I'm gonna call you one day." And about 2 years later, he calls me and he says, "Hey, I'm putting together..." He has a side band called The Revolting Cocks.
Yes, love it. Okay? Yep.
So he was putting The Revolting Cocks back together, and he needed a guitar player. And so he asked if I wanted to come on board. And it was just to do the tour, which was The Revolting Cocks opening for Ministry. Yeah. And
yeah,
so,
I remember that.
Yeah. So this is like 2006. Uh-huh. 2005, actually, is when I went out. He flew me out to El Paso. And we rehearsed, and then we went on the road in 2006. And during that tour, Al and I just became close. And so after that tour, Ministry went off to Europe. I stayed here. And from Europe, they sent me an email, and he said, "Hey, you know, do you want to help me write the new Ministry album?"
That must have been
such
a thrill.
Yeah, just I just talking about it, even still,
I still
get chills, you know, because it was such a meaningful thing for me. And and I remember I said, of course, as soon as he got back from Europe, they flew me to El Paso again. And I remember showing up with my little Tascam 4-track recorder, and I had a couple of riffs, you know, song ideas written. But I was honestly, my mindset was, if one of my riffs ends up on an album, a Ministry album, like that'll make my life, like I'll be just so content, right? I ended up writing half that album.
Gosh.
Playing guitar on every track on that album except for one. And and that was it. Like, you know, from that point on, I stayed there. I finished that one album, which turned into an album called The Last Sucker. And then while I was there, you know, finishing up, I thought that I was going to be coming back home. And Al says, "Hey, we're going to do another Revolting Cocks album." And I said, "Okay." And he goes, "I want you to help me work on it." And I said, "Okay." I said, what do you have? What ideas do you have?" And he goes, "I don't have any." He goes, "That's your job." And so,
wow. He picked a good one.
So I was like, okay. You know, and I was asking him questions like, what direction do you want it to go in? You know, what do you want it to sound like or anything? Give me something. And he was like, "Just write some like catchy electronic rock songs." That's all he gave me. And so at the time,
boy, he was being lazy bones.
Yes. At the time, there were two studios going in El Paso for him. So while he was mixing the Ministry album, which we had just finished, I was in the other studio starting to write the new Revolting Cocks album. And I just remember I had nothing written. I mean, I was like, you know, I was thinking I was going to come back home. And I just started writing, and every 2 or 3 days was a new song and a new idea. And finished that album. And then I'm thinking I'm going to come back home again. And he says, "Okay, we're going to do a Ministry cover song album." And he gives me a list of these cover songs. And he goes, "I want you to learn them." He goes, "And then I want you to make them sound like Ministry." So here I am.
Your point.
Oh my God, Pamela, I was like, I was so stressed and so like, I wasn't sleeping at night. I had insomnia because I'm thinking like, this is a lot on my shoulders. You know what I mean? Yes. I didn't want to like disappoint them. And so I started learning all these cover songs. And the first song that we did that I learned was Under My Thumb by the Stones, right?
Yes.
Made it sound like Ministry doing that.
That's really an exciting suggestion, like exciting thing for him to ask you to do, because wow.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine turning the, but you did it.
Yeah. And what's crazy about that is that song on that album is the first Grammy nomination that I got.
How about that?
Which was just blows my mind.
And what year was that?
This was 2009.
Not that long ago. And you got another nomination.
I got another one the year after that for a live record that we did.
Wow.
We just be live album that we did. And yes, we did two. We had two Grammy. I got two Grammy nominations with them. The band has six total.
God.
But the band's 0 for 6. And we're like the Susan Lucci of
it's stunning that they were nominated at all because it's such hardcore. It's impossible to describe that kind of music. Industrial doesn't cut it, in my opinion. There's so much more to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No, you're right. And I mean, just to, you know, cliche thing to say, but it's so true, just to be nominated and just to be presence in the category with all those other guys.
Who else were you nominated with that you were crazy about? A guitar player.
Well, Judas Priest was on one of them. Yeah. Which I'm a big old school Judas Priest fan.
Yeah.
And then the following year, we lost one to Judas Priest. We lost one to Metallica. So, you know, and we were like nominated with like Slayer and Megadeth.
Yeah.
That style.
Yeah. You couldn't be pigeonholed, really. They had to put you guys somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's how the whole thing started. I mean, and you know, it was 15 years.
Yeah.
You know, with that roller coaster, and I mean, you know what it's like.
I know. I interviewed Al and Paul, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I interviewed them in Chicago, probably 20 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Cynthia Plastercaster was very friendly with them, and she took me to meet him, and we had this. I mean, you don't know what to expect with Al at all, but he was nothing like I thought he'd be. He was so forthcoming.
Yeah, yeah.
And such a charmer. Yes. Oh my God. Yes. But very unpredictable.
Never know.
No.
Or where it's going to go.
Yeah. But we really hit it off really great. And for a few years there, I saw him. He came to a party even. I went to his house.
Yeah.
But I don't know what happened.
Was this out in Chicago or here?
No, it's when he moved to LA. How long was he here? He was here for.
Well, he was in LA many years ago, and then he moved.
Yes.
And then he came back.
He went to Texas.
Uh huh. He went to El Paso, and then he came back in 2015.
Okay. I haven't seen him since then.
Oh, really?
Well, last time I saw him was when I saw you play with him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. He
the Nokia, I guess.
Yeah, it was the Nokia, which I don't even know if that's what it's called now, but it's in by the Staples Center.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what it's called anymore either. I'm sure it's something else.
Yeah. But just a wild ride.
And what year was that?
God, that was
years and months.
2012, 13.
Wow, that long ago.
Yeah.
Amazing. Wow.
Yeah. Because so Mikey was still there.
Playing with him for a long, long time.
Yeah, up until last year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, last year I left. I was, you know, 15 years.
It's a long time.
It's a long time in any relationship, in any capacity. You know what I mean? And and it's really weird how it happened because this was. You know, right before the pandemic and all that stuff. So
yeah,
the last thing we did was the Slayer tour that I did with them was the Slayer, you know, arena tour. And 3 years ago this month, November 2019. So we did that run. And then January, February of 2020, we were rehearsing to go to Australia and Japan to play the Download festivals. And I was still in the band. I was still rehearsing with them and everything. And then this sickness started. You know what I mean? Like people started getting sick and they started talking about all this stuff. And this is early 2020. And then literally March 2020, we were still full band rehearsals. And
That's the month it was.
That's when it hit the fan.
I know.
And we literally were about a week away from flying to Australia.
Oh. What
when we got bummer. The call, when we got the call of, it's not going to happen. And that was it. And then, you know, the whole rest of the year was just, we didn't. And we were thinking, okay, well, you know, this will go away in a couple months or something.
Oh, we all hope.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that wasn't the case. And so that turned into another year.
Yep.
And then I got really sick.
What
happened? In 2021, I was rushed to the hospital. And I felt like I was just going to pass out. And I've never passed out in my life. And, but I just did not feel right. So I was rushed to the hospital, and the nurse immediately sees me in the ER, and he goes, we're going to check my blood. And he says, you need a blood transfusion.
Whoa.
And I was like,
that was shocking.
What? Like, never thought I would ever hear those words. You know what I mean?
Huh.
And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, yeah. He goes, you need a blood transfusion, like, right now. And so,
thank goodness you went there.
Yeah. And you know, I'm signing all these documents I have to sign and all this shit. And so they hook me up, and I get a blood transfusion. They keep me overnight, and they say, you need a second blood transfusion because your numbers aren't going up.
What did they say caused it? Did they have any clue?
Well, in the end, I ended up being in the hospital like over a week, three blood transfusions. And I'm like, it was, I got to say, I was scared.
Yeah.
Like, I was really scared because it wasn't looking good. Yeah. Like, I'm getting all this blood and it's not retaining, and it just, it wasn't looking good. By the end of it, the doctor that was seeing me at the hospital started going over all my medical records and everything. And he says, do you know that you're anemic? Have you been anemic? And I said, no. And he goes, yeah. He goes, you've been like anemic since 2014.
How, he had records back that far? Huh.
And so he goes, your doctor never told you this? I said, no, this is the first I'm hearing about this. So what was happening is somehow in 2014, my hemoglobin started dropping. And it had been dropping every year until I hit pretty much rock bottom.
So you felt it as weakness and
yeah.
And
but you know, I was just like, I'm just tired. I'm just run down. I do a lot. And I'm like, you know, I need to just suck it up. And, you know, I just brushed it off. You know what I mean?
I'm sure.
Yeah. Not knowing that I was actually anemic all those years. And so long story short, I have to take iron supplements now.
Right.
And everything's been fine.
Are you vegetarian or something?
No.
Mm-mm. So they don't even know why that occurred.
Just like that, like, wow. You know, literally one year to the next, it just happened. And
did it so, do anything to you, like spiritually or?
Yes.
So it does, right? When you get closer. So what happened inside your heart and soul?
You know, it puts things into perspective as things like that usually do. I was home. I had been home, you know, for months because of the pandemic everything like that. So I was already kind of like starting to feel a little more grounded at home as opposed to being out on the road all the time.
Uh-huh.
And after that happened, I just really wanted to be around my family and around like my very close friends and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it just made me, I don't know, you know, it made me not want to be gone.
Yeah.
Like out on the road.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
A lot of people didn't want to go back to the office either.
No.
I mean, that was a big shift that happened from the pandemic.
Huge.
That and it makes sense too. I mean, I understand it.
And it I don't know, for my entire life, this is all I wanted to do. You know, it was music ever since I was 5 years old.
I want to go all the way back to that.
Yeah.
So let's go all the way back to when you decided you wanted to play music.
You want to hear, this is funny.
And
this,
okay.
In a weird way, sort of ties in. You sort of tie into that in a weird way.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, so I was 6 years old. And so I grew up in my parents both from Mexico. I was born here in the States. My dad was a singer in a band in Mexico in the 60s. Okay. That's how he met my mom.
Oh, God, how perfect, huh?
So he did that. He released an album. It had a number one hit song in Mexico.
That is so cool.
Yeah. And meets my mom. She's not crazy about him doing that.
Oh, so, no. She didn't have groupie mentality.
Right.
No.
So anyways, he... they get married. They move to the States. He quits music. He never goes back to it. Right. I'm born. 6 years old. So now up until 6 years old, I mean, I'm always listening to music at home. I'm listening to my dad's, you know, the Kinks, the Stones, the Animals.
So they like the real cool music.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, huge Eric. I mean, I knew who Eric Burdon was at 5 years old. You know what I mean? Like I grew up like
oh,
that. So
God, I'm going to tell you an Eric Burdon story, you know, nice. Before we get done.
So 6 years old now, my older cousin brings over Kiss Alive. And I'm looking at it. Keep in mind, this is 1975. Mm-hmm. So I'm staring at this and I'm like, what, are they superheroes? And he says, well, they're banned, you know? And he drops the needle on the record. Like, I have chills right now. Like, I drops the needle on the record. The first song, Deuce, comes on. And my world completely turned upside down. And I was like, completely just entranced in that. And
at
I said,
6 years old.
At 6 years old. And I just, you know, double live album with the inserts, with the pictures.
Oh, yes, it's very child friendly, the visuals
big time,
and everything.
Big time. I mean, you know, and so I'm staring at this, listening to that entire album. And I remember every time a solo would come on, I was like, who's that? Because that's Ace.
Yeah.
Every time. Hey, that's Ace. And I remember telling them, this is what I'm going to do at six.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow. Well, let's hear Deuce.
And so that song, I mean, just to this day, you know, it still takes me back whenever I hear Deuce. It just takes me back to that first time hearing it.
I get it.
And I was like, I had tunnel vision from that point on. It was just like, I want to play the guitar. I want to do music. And I wasn't interested in anything else.
How about your dad and mom? Were they okay with it? Or?
They were. My parents, very hardworking, very traditional, you know, Mexican parents, very supportive. My mom to this day is my biggest fan, and she's just means the world to me.
That's wonderful.
Means the world to me. And, you know, very supportive. My dad growing up was kind of like he was, you know, okay with it, but he didn't seem as into it as I would have thought. You know what I mean? Like thinking,
musician,
yeah. Sure. But as I got older, I think, you know, I kind of learned that he was trying to protect me from certain things. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Sure.
In the business. And so, yeah, it was just like my whole childhood and my whole, you know, as a teenager in school, junior high, high school, I was already playing the guitar. I started playing the guitar at 10. And so
were you popular in school because of the
This was funny. I was like kind of a loner, not very popular in school. We had moved from a predominantly Hispanic area to a very white area in Burbank when I was in seventh grade. Okay. And so I'm like the new kid in this school, one of like maybe three Hispanics in the entire school back then.
Wow.
And so it was a huge culture shock for me,
mm-hmm.
you know, and again, not popular at all until I picked up a guitar and played the talent show. And then all of a sudden, wow, girls are talking to me.
What grade? What a surprise.
Eighth grade, play the talent show. And all of a sudden, everyone wants to be my friend.
Well, you're good and you're damn good. My God, I was listening to your new thing you sent me today.
Oh, yeah, it's heavy.
but the guitar riffs are just like hard.
Very. Precise.
but so great.
Thank you.
So
oh, thank you.
So
thank you.
Made me want to just you know, get you all excited.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, okay, we'll come back to that.
So that was sort of a turning point for me. I was like, oh, wow. Like the guitar opens up all these other things.
Well, you know, Gene Simmons, of course, you know his quote about it. He did it for the girls.
Right.
But you didn't do it for the girls.
No.
This happened upon
you. Yeah. And so, you know, even at that early age, I just kind of, I always kept that in the back of my mind, you know. I was like, you know, I'm the same person, you know, I was before you saw me play the guitar.
Yeah.
You know, so I always kept that. You know what I mean? I always kept
pretty
that.
Wise for that being 14.
I gotta say, for being that age, yeah, I was, you know, I always kept that there. And to this day, I mean, you know, all my years in the business and touring and traveling and all that, I always like, there's always, you know.
Well, that's good parenting prop too, also, right?
Yeah, I think so.
It gets instilled.
Yeah. Yes. At an early age. Yeah, I think so. But that was, you know, that was the big sort of introduction into me playing. And I was like, this is it. Like, to me, that was like my drug. I was like, I want that.
What did you play that day? Do you remember?
Livewire by Motley Crue.
Oh, okay. Of course you remember.
Yeah. And then the following year, ninth grade, same thing, did the talent show again. And we did You Think You're Tough by Rat. Mm. And I, you know, I wasn't a popular kid, like in the sort of, you know, popular clique or anything like
right,
that.
Right.
I was in concert band, marching band, jazz band, because I also played the saxophone.
Oh.
I played the sax all through junior high and high school.
Huh. Can you still play it?
You know, I haven't played it in years, but I'm sure I can. I still have my marching band outfit, which I'm sure I don't fit in.
Oh, anymore. That sounds sexy.
I'm pretty sure I don't fit in that marching band outfit anymore, but I still have it. But yeah, I was kind of like, you know, a band geek kind of, you know,
yeah,
guy. And then
did you have long hair then?
I did. Yeah. I've always had, even as the pictures of me 3-4 years old, my hair is longer than it is now.
Yeah, but people don't think of long haired guys as geeks though.
Well, yeah. No, but I thought of myself as one.
Okay. I'm sure you were not.
But yeah, that was one thing my parents, because my dad had long hair when he met my mom, and she always liked long hair on guys.
Uh-huh.
And so even as a little
kid.
You
know,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was it. And then, you know, at 18, started playing the backyard parties.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 19, the very first club I played at was at the Whiskey,
which was
monumental.
What band?
I was in a band called Rampage.
Very good name.
Yeah.
There's so much more to say, but let's take a quick break and we'll be right back, dolls. All right, we're back.
And
was it the same kind of music that you wound up?
For the most part, it was like hard rock. Hard rock. Okay. Yeah. It was heavy, but not as heavy as, you know.
Whiskey, though. Were you thrilled to play Whiskey at that age?
Kidding me?
Had you seen bands there yet already?
I had.
Oh.
I saw the Blasters.
Best. Oh my God. Love
Dave,
them.
Phil.
Love them so much. With Dave and Phil. Yeah. Great. Because
I was a big Blasters fan as well.
Wow. I was going to ask you. Yeah. The influences.
Yeah. And I remember the Blasters, it was the Blasters X.
Oh, what a bill.
And the Plugs, who turned into Tito and the Tarantulas.
Okay.
So that was the bill. And I mean, I was like,
what a bill.
I was probably around 14, 15, something like that.
Well, that's a mind-boggling group of musicians
to
see at the Whiskey so young.
Yeah. And I think, you know, actually coming down here, I thought I passed where the country club used to be.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Which I also saw a bunch of like, shows there back
I saw
the
Prince there. I know. I leaned on the stage and said, stood in line for hours. He showed up at 2 a.m. to play.
Really?
That's what he was like. But
what year was
but
it?
You waited anyway.
Of course.
I don't remember what year. It was probably early, but not you know, underpants early. But early.
Gotcha.
Our boxer friends who saw him play in the underpants at Flappers.
Really?
Flippers. It was a skating rink.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he played. And
I never got to see
this. Yeah, he. Oh, you didn't?
I never got to
see. Oh, my God. What a great live show. I saw him many times. Praise Jesus.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I went to Paisley Park.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't see him play there?
No, this was after he passed.
Oh.
Yeah.
This after what's going on at Paisley Park that you didn't see?
Actually, one of the drummers in ministry used to work for Prince. And I happened to be in Minneapolis. He was still there, like doing stuff at Paisley Park. And so he was like, hey, what are you doing? Come down. He just kind of invited me over and we just kind of saw, he showed me around, you know, some spots there. And
I got to see him at Paisley Park too.
Wow.
I know. I've been very lucky. It happened in such a weird way. I don't know if you're interested in finding out.
Of course.
You know, Don Johnson, the actor, is an old beau of mine and a very dear friend. And he was seeing Barbara Streisand for a while there. And I was in New York and I knew he was staying at the Parker Meridian. And I called and I said, can I come up for a few minutes? I have a little time. He said, sure, come on up. And when I got there, it was Barbara was there and Mo Austin.
Wow.
I know.
Heavy hitters there.
And we were chatting away and I was trying to be cool around Barbara. I mean, some people are so iconic that they don't quite seem human, you know. Yeah. So, but she was nice. She was very friendly to me all the time. She wanted to be Don's friend. She wanted them to really like her. She was so crazy about him.
Well, wow.
He was hot. But anyway, I said, yeah, I'm on my way to Minneapolis. I was promoting my third book, I think, third one. And I hear Prince is playing. I'd give anything to go to Paisley Park. And I didn't even realize I was talking to Mo Austin about
right,
it.
Right, sure.
And he said, oh, I'll get you into that. I was like, oh, really? Wow. That was such a great moment to just call Don on a whim and say hi to him. And
amazing.
Mo Austin was there. So I got to go to that a couple nights later in Minneapolis. Yeah. And he was
incredible. What a great, like, chain of events, right?
Oh, it's pretty cool.
That's awesome. Wow. Amazing. I mean that's one artist I wish I had. Him, Hendrix.
Yeah. Well, you were too young for Hendrix.
I know. I should have been born 20 years earlier.
I know, that's what people always say to me. They're always, you know, wishing they were hanging out with me in 1966 on the strip. Yeah.
So what, can I ask you something?
Yeah, of course. You can ask me.
So
whatever you want.
What was the first gig you went to? Like club yourself.
A club gig.
Yeah.
Because the first band I saw was the Beatles at the Hollywood Bowl, which is pretty good. But
not a bad first band to see.
When I was fifth row too.
Oh, wow.
One of my Beatle girls' fathers knew someone who worked at the Bowl. It was miraculous.
Wow.
But my first like club gig, it was not quite a club. It was the Hollywood Palladium.
Okay, yeah.
Captain Beefheart.
Oh, really?
I know. I was still in high school. His cousin went to my high school, Victor.
Wow.
And he invited me to meet his cousin, Don Van Vliet. You talked earlier about the life-changing moment of hearing Kiss. Mm-hmm. When I met Don Van Vliet, my whole life flipped over.
Really?
Yeah.
That was it for you.
I was Pam. And he said, coming up and down and said, it's wonderful to meet you, Pamela. I wish there were more people like you. He called me Pamela, said there were wish there were more people like me. I was like, really? And he told me at that moment, he said, you are a gas. And I didn't know what a gas was, but I wanted to find out. So I became a gas.
Sure.
For Don Van Vliet. And we were friends all the way through. He was such a recluse, but.
Wow.
Whenever I could.
Amazing.
I was with him one night at the Whiskey. And he's not someone who should have taken drugs. He didn't need them. I was with him one night at the Whiskey backstage. And he was snorting these mounds of coke. And I was going, why is he doing that? He doesn't need to lose his mind. You know, he already passed a long time ago. But it was weird to be around him on coke.
Really?
Right. Wow. But he did a great show. Oh, Lord.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing. And then what was the first thing, probably I'm assuming as a kid, that you saw or heard?
As a kid?
Yeah.
Elvis.
Were you, was it Elvis? That's what I thought.
It was Elvis.
Do you remember like
Do I remember?
Just the exact.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
My dad often took me to yard sales, garage sales. That's why I still loved a lot of stuff, as you can see.
Yeah, sure.
And he said, find something, you know, you if whatever you want, just pick something. I'll buy it for you. And there was nothing, no dolls. I was 8 and a half, not quite 9. And there was nothing I wanted. And I saw a stack of records. And I picked them up. I chose 2. One was Great Balls of Fire by Jerry Lee Lewis. Mm-hmm. And Jailhouse Rock. But the flip side was Treat Me Nice.
Mm.
So look out.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely.
I came home. I had a little 45 record player. And I put it on. And my life was completely changed. My mom kept saying, "What? Can you stop playing that?" I played it over and over and over. And even at that age, I was saying, what would one do to treat Elvis nice? What could I do? And I went through life with that attitude about musicians. You can thank Elvis for that.
Nice. Wow. And now, did you ever get to see?
Yeah, I saw him twice.
Yeah.
I had an opportunity to meet him. It's in I'm with the band, of course, but I had just gotten engaged to Michael DeBar, and I was afraid I just would not have remained true.
Sure, of course.
Yeah, because
I don't know that I would have either.
I feel that way. But it was Larry Geller. You're familiar with Larry Geller?
Sure. Yeah.
He was Elvis's hairdresser and spiritual advisor, mm-hmm. and he was a friend of mine. Mm. And he called one day and said, Elvis wants a girl to come up and watch TV with him and the boys.
Wow.
I just can't do it. And when I told Michael later, he said, are you kidding me? He said, of course you should have done that. Oh
God. Wow.
But we did get to see him play. I saw him once with Michael. Actually, his last time he played Vegas.
Mm.
And he still sang like the king he was.
Yeah.
And I went with Led Zeppelin when he was in the black leather outfit.
Wow.
Front row in between Jimmy and Robert.
Oh my God.
I have some great memories.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yep. And we were all just, are you kidding? Wow. Blown away.
Of course.
It was right after he did that Christmas special.
Yeah. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm telling you, I should have been born in 1949 as opposed to 1969.
Yeah.
I
was born in 48.
Yeah. See,
that's,
I often think about what it would have been like touring like in the 70s. That's like one of my favorite eras to me is the 70s. I was a little kid in the 70s.
Yeah.
But those are the bands that I, you know, was listening to, the Zeppelins and the, you know, and Kiss and, and all those guys. And
well, there was backstage madness back then, which doesn't happen anymore. No. Or even it only happened during 60s, probably, well, sometime into the 80s too with those hair bands, but
yeah,
but it just, and I mean, did you ever have all kinds of backstage madness with your band
early on? Yeah,
yeah, like,
yeah, yeah. I mean,
the maddest things that happened.
Well, I got to like experience a lot of insanity. In the my first touring international touring band is a band called Society One, and this was 20, 25 years ago. And I think we caught the tail end of that stuff. You know what I mean? Like, we caught the tail end of us showing up and there would just be a line of girls and just wanting to spend time with us and hang out with us
in all kinds of ways.
Not just
a lot of times, just to be with,
just be around.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Yeah. And it was a lot of that, and mm-hmm. and you know, wow, we were like,
okay,
really, like, you know, it was the attractive women that just want to be around us.
Sure. You know what I mean? Well, it's the energy. It's that energy. You know, the music that moves you like that. It's almost indescribable, the desire and the passion. You want to be with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not, you know, sometimes when I talk to people and you know, they bring up, oh, you know, it's, you know, you're talking about groupies and this and that. And they talk about it in a, like, in a negative
way. Tell
me about it. you know what I'm saying. But it's like, you know, there are some people that music touches so deeply.
Yes, exactly.
It's not just the, oh yeah, I like that song. I like that
no,
band.
No, no, way past that.
It goes beyond that.
Yes, you know? Almost religious experience.
Yeah. Yes. And just so happens that some of those are attractive women and they, it makes, I don't know. It just, it sort of can, it creates this sort of, I don't know, this symbiosis. Circle of, yeah, this circle of energy, yeah. Almost.
Oh, totally. I love hearing from your point of view because yeah. Of course I'm on the other side of that. But it is, it's a beautiful full circle moment. If it's, I mean, it's always like a reciprocal,
yes,
joyous thing to share each other in a sexual way, or just like I used to hang out with Rod Stewart's band, for instance, because they played on our record.
Yeah.
Jeff Beck Group. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just liked hanging out. We sure. Would go over there and watch soccer on TV. That yeah. Was a little boring, but we would do it anyway.
Right. But you were, you know what?
Hang out with them.
Yeah, because you were around. I mean, for me, it felt amazing that something that I wrote, okay,
yeah,
touched someone so deeply that they want to be just next to me. They yeah. Want to be sitting with me.
Oh,
they want,
so
you
sweet.
Know what I mean? And it
yeah.
and it made me. It almost fueled me to create even
sure.
More.
Well, they are muses. Groupies are muses, and anyone who doesn't believe that hasn't had that experience.
Yes,
or does not have the humility you have. To understand the connection for what it is.
It's very true. And it's not, you know, it is not simply a sexual thing. That's not what that means. That word means to me. You mm-hmm. Know what I mean? It doesn't yeah. Just mean a sexual thing to me. And it was like pulling into town. There are these amazing, amazing people that I've met throughout my years that, you yeah. Know, a
and
lot
you,
of
you
them
can see
became,
them over and over.
Yes, I became yes. Lifelong friends.
Yeah, yeah. It's so fun. So
that
fun.
Is just, you know, I mean, I can't describe, and it's hard for me to talk to people that haven't gone through it or experienced it.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like they just don't understand.
No, there's no way to understand it. Because it, there's really nothing like it. You know, right now I just had my book option to do a series of I'm with the Band. And I just pray they get that thing
they
you're
get
describing.
It. They understand.
I should bring you into a meeting so you can explain it. Because that is such a exquisite symbiosis between the muse and the person who you, the way you described it just now. They would just want to be close to you for something you wrote. Of course, that's a create that is your creation being, you know, taken into someone's
yes.
Heart. It's just amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, sometimes after shows or whatever, meet and greets or whatever, you know, the case, every now and then I come across some people that just are almost in tears.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And those are the ones that, you know, you've really touched.
Yeah, I know.
And that.
And just being around you. I mean, on some level, that happens to me now, people who've loved my books.
Sure.
And it's just this, you see this, you know, the feeling you had
sure.
Over Kiss when you were
yeah.
Little or what.
Yeah.
It's, you recognize it yourself because you felt it yourself
yeah.
With it.
Yeah.
So it's a stunning thing. And if for anyone who hasn't experienced it, pick up the guitar.
Exactly. Immediately, because it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing, and and yeah, I mean, so we did, you know, we did get to touch on some of the craziness of mm-hmm. You know, of the that lifestyle and the whole, you know, insanity of being in a band and the whole backstage thing and all that stuff, and it was great.
It doesn't happen so much now.
No,
there's
that. I'll tell you, for me, it started, you know,
waning.
Not, yeah, started not happening as much.
Yeah.
I mean, easy 10 years.
Yeah.
Over 10 years.
Yeah.
You know.
Why do you think that is?
Well, we.
Fear.
Well, we
People
used to
afraid.
See it. Well, that. But it used to be real easy to get backstage. Back in
yeah.
The day, now it's you know, okay, you're getting it. There are checkpoints every 5 feet.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? It's yeah. like before where, yeah, you know, yeah. you could just, hey, you show up early or something. Hey, you just walk in and I don't know. It was just, it was a lot
it's,
different.
It's
a different,
changed,
it was yeah, a different scene, different mindset on everything.
I'm glad you got the,
me too.
Part of that experience.
Yeah. It was amazing. I mean, don't get, listen, you know, for a kid that didn't get a lot of attention, didn't get a lot of attention from the opposite sex,
mm-hmm.
to then all of a sudden be thrown into
yeah that. And it happened to a lot of people, a lot of these nerdy British boys that I've met and be early on, Mitch Mitchell and Noel Redding, oh. for instance, right? They were these little tiny hobbit dudes and then all these just girls just right yeah. yeah. just couldn't wait to be with them,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
and they seemed startled at first.
No, it is startling in the beginning, you know, and it's yeah. like I quickly learned to play it off as if, okay, I'm okay with it, I'm cool, like I you know, this isn't yeah. shocking me right yeah. now, even though inside I'm like, holy shit, like I can't believe, you know, this yeah. beautiful woman, you know what I mean, wants to, you know, hang out with me. But it is shocking at first, you know, when you come from not getting the time of day from,
yeah,
from, you know,
yeah, I mean, yeah, sure, I get it 100%.
It's crazy.
I had to, when, like, for instance, I was at Altamont with the Stones, it was a really a horrific, stunning day, and I had to pretend I was okay being there. So you act as if a lot of the time,
sure,
you know, you just yeah. have to, but
yeah.
that takes a lot of strength sometimes.
Were you there with the Stones that day?
Yeah, yes. And afterwards, and Mick was just saying, I give up. I can't do this anymore.
Wow.
They were really, it was me, the Stones, a couple of roadies, Graham Parsons, Michelle Phillips, were the only people in this hotel room afterwards.
Wow.
And it was an intense, very intense situation.
I've watched that DVD, that video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I
can't even tell you how many times.
Yeah. God, I know. A lot of people say that was the end of the 60s because the Manson thing happened around the same time, but the 60s went into the 70s. I think.
Yeah.
It
definitely trickled over into the early 70s there, yeah. you know, absolutely.
But the hard drugs fucked a lot of things up. And I know you don't take drugs.
Never have.
I know. It's just astounding.
Never had a drink in my life.
I know. I just... How is that even feasible in the world you're you
especially,
must
especially with Al.
I know, especially with Al. You must have seen so much more than most of your peers.
Yeah.
Because yes. you could.
Yes. And I remember everything as well. Yeah.
Are you yeah. writing a book? Then,
not yet, but I've actually been approached by a couple of
You should, because people. You were really there. People can't remember stuff like you can.
I
mean, wow.
And that's, you know, I attribute that to, in part, to my parents.
Yeah.
Did
they not drink or take drugs either?
My dad drank, but very casually.
Yeah.
You know, would have a beer, you know, at someone's, at a birthday party or.
You never wanted to have a sip?
No. My mom, same thing. Very, very super light drinkers.
Yeah.
They never took drugs. They never smoked. Right. And so, you know, I that's what I saw growing up. Right.
Yeah. So, a lot of those people did those, saw that growing
no,
up.
No, I exactly. Yeah. But I do remember at about 8 or 9 or something like that, my mom taking me aside and saying, you know, because she saw how serious I was about wanting to do music even mm-hmm. at that early age.
Yeah.
And so, and I remember vividly having this conversation with her. She said, you know what, she goes, if you want to do music, whatever you want to do, I will support you in any way, you know, 1000%, just don't get involved in like drugs and stuff like that. I remember that.
Huh. Right?
So that always stuck with me
at that young age.
At that young age.
That's
yeah.
pretty amazing.
And then, you know, at about 13 or so, when I started jamming with my, you know, little buddies and garage, you know, bands and stuff like that, I was always the youngest. I was like 13, the other guys were about 16 17. And I remember the very first time I saw a bong.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what it was, and so we're playing, and all of a sudden the guys want to take a break. And so we're just kind of sitting around and they break out this contraption. And I'm like, what the hell is that? Like, I was like, I thought it was like an instrument. Like, I had no, this is how naive I was to all that stuff. Right.
Yeah.
And so, and still am to this day, to be honest with you. And so they start like smoking, you know, into this thing. And I was like, what the hell is that? And then I started noticing how they were acting a little differently. And then they were drinking a lot and stuff like that. And then they passed it along to me and I just passed it to the next guy. And I'm just like, okay, I'm ready to play. Like, let's play. And I started to see how their personalities kind of changed a little.
Yeah.
And I was just so focused on wanting to do music. You know what I mean? And I'm not like, I don't like to stand on a soapbox and tell people, don't do this, don't do that. Like, that just worked for me.
No, you don't seem like that type of
guy. I'm not like that at all, you know? And,
but did you have peer pressure? I mean, how did Al take it?
I was fine. Surprisingly, but this is what's funny is I had more pressure from other guys growing up, like other friends, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, oh, you know, come on, you know, what are you, blah, 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 or this, or whatever. And I was just like, no, I'm just not interested. But I think they saw how cut and dry I was with it. And I'm like, it's just not my thing.
No, you just weren't wishy-washy just about it at all.
Yeah, just wasn't
you weren't even
thing.
Tempted.
No, not at all. Not to this day, never. Just, and
but you know what one of a kind that makes you?
Well,
it really does.
Did you ever hear
world, in this world you're in?
Did you ever hear of Gene's story about when he?
Oh yeah, Gene.
When he accidentally had some of hot brownie.
I don't know if I did. No.
So he was out on the road, right, in the 70s, and he was out with. He had just been interviewed by Cream magazine, and of course, it was a very attractive. Journalist that interviewed him. He ends up hanging out with her that night, right? They go to some party and he loves chocolate. So he devours all these brownies and things like that. Well, they were laced with something.
Yes.
And so he says, we got in the limo. He goes, and all of a sudden I felt like I had to yell because I felt like no one could hear me. He goes, so I'm yelling to this poor girl. He's sitting next to me in the limo. He goes, and I'm yelling that I need milk. So we pull over at a diner.
Oh, boy.
Because I want milk. So they stop. They get milk. He goes, and I'm yelling in this diner for milk. He goes, I get the milk. They put me back in the limo. He goes, we get to the hotel room. And this is back when you actually had to use keys.
Yes.
He goes, the key... to me felt like it was the size of an anvil. And I couldn't get it in.
This is a great story. I'm surprised I've never heard it.
Yeah. He goes, and I couldn't get it into the he goes, so eventually she put me in the room. She put me to bed. I passed out. And he goes, so that's the only time I've actually been.
Yeah. I know he is too. Very, very few people though.
Very few. Very true.
And Frank Zappa too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
He smoked pot one time with Mark and Howard.
Really?
And felt nothing. He said that.
Really?
That's the only time he ever got high, ever.
Ever. I knew that about Frank, that he was also very, like, clean. And, you know, as far as that, wasn't into that.
Does it have anything to do, I don't think it does with you, but being a control freak.
Sort of.
Gene certainly is.
Well,
and Frank was, too.
I want to say yes, but not, like, not a control freak into where... you know, I'm like a dictator with people. Not that those guys, you know, are.
Well, Frank was for sure.
You know what I mean? But yeah, but it's like I need to be in control of myself is what is the feeling.
Oh, okay.
I know that I have an addictive personality. Like when I like something, I like the hell out of it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want, you know, I don't want one Reese's peanut butter cup. I want 100 of them.
That's my favorite candy. Oh, my God. Have you tried Lily's?
No.
They're the health version. They're made with stevia, and you can't even tell it's stevia.
Really?
So try those.
Where do you get them?
Lily's. Whole Foods.
Okay.
Any of those places.
Yeah.
She makes a lot of good candy, a lot of chocolate.
Reese's. Yeah, that's my weakness.
She makes great peanut butter cups.
So that's like control in that sense. Yeah, is that I always feel like I have to be in control of myself and my surroundings. Mm. And it always freaked me out thinking, okay, if I do this, if I drink this, or if I try that, I might not be in control of myself. And that always scared the hell out of me.
Huh.
So I never wanted that. And I never wanted to throw up, never wanted to get sick. It always freaked me out. So I'm like, why am I going to do this? Because I know I'm going to get to that point. So no, I'll stick to, at the time back then, I'll just stick to hanging out with pretty girls. And, you know, I'll have my chocolate and I'll just have some great company and
guitar.
That'll be it for me. You know what I mean?
Guitar.
And my guitar. Absolutely. Yeah. Which was with me the whole time.
I would like to hear about your new band. And I'd like to play a little bit of that cut you sent me.
Great.
So tell me about it.
So the band, the new project is called Siglos, which is a Spanish word for, means centuries or lifetime.
Oh.
And one of the songs that we have is called Por los Siglos. Not the one I sent you, but another one called Por los Siglos, which is a very well-known saying in Spanish, meaning like, you know, till the end of time or... slow sort of translates into that in English. So when we wrote that first song, which is titled Por los Siglos, that word siglo stuck out to me. And that's what I decided to name that project. And it's all in Spanish. It's very heavy. It's it has elements of industrial in there, but it goes even way out. It goes further out there.
It's, you know, absolutely fabulous.
Thank you.
Oh,
thank
yeah.
You. Thank you.
I mean, from the very beginning.
It starts out, it gets your attention right away. You know, and it was, you know, there we actually are just finishing up a 5-song EP for that.
Oh,
and that'll be out in January.
Oh, good.
2023. So that's good. What I've been working on right now. But it's a brand new project, all in Spanish. And hopefully we take it out on the road summer of 2023.
Well, let's hear that riff right now.
Great. Awesome. Heavy. It'll wake you up in the morning.
Yeah. Oh boy. But I always love the way you throw your hair around on stage.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad I still have it.
You have a lot of it.
I'm glad I still have it. Knock on wood that it doesn't go away. Thank you for playing that.
Yes. Well, thank you for being my guest.
Yeah.
The time flew like I don't think I've ever had it fly, you guys. Wow. That was fantastic.
Awesome.
Loved it.
Can I ask you one more thing?
Yes, you can. And of course.
When you were on the Oprah show, what was the experience like for you?
I did Oprah twice. Once I was on with Paul and Jean.
Yeah.
And they hogged the whole show. I mean, I had a lot I wanted to say.
Yes.
But they were, you know, especially Gene hogged the show. And he and I were good friends for many years. I haven't seen him in a while, but and also Jackie Collins was on the show.
I remember.
And she didn't know a thing about rock and roll.
No.
She had written a terrible book that I reviewed for Rolling Stone. And my last line was the rudest thing I've ever been in my life. I said, you know, something's happening, but you don't know what it is. Do you, Miss Collins? I mean, she was so rude, right? I got to thank Dylan for that. But anyway, she was on the show. So I really didn't get a lot to say there.
I agree with that.
I should have been able to say a lot more.
Yeah. I've seen that episode so many times. Pamela, I've been on tour in my hotel room. Watching that over and over. I love that episode.
Really?
Yeah.
I've only seen it maybe just the one time. Oh, yeah. I only say about five words.
I've been the hundreds in watching that thing. I thought you were great in it. I thought that I wish they had showcased you more.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
You know, but I guess trying to talk over Gene is you know how Gene is.
Yes, I do. Okay, let me tell you one Gene story. Mm-hmm. My favorite Gene story, personal Gene. I always have big parties. And you've got to come to one, for God's sake. I have these great parties. And this was Christmas. And we had just gotten all our Christmas cards. Michael, I was still with Michael. And we had them on the mantle. One of them was Gene's Christmas card with his tongue out and all that stuff. And it was sitting in front of a bunch of candles and everything. And as he walked through the fucking door, his Christmas card caught on fire.
Oh, my.
It's the truth. Oh, it's my. The truth. I went, hey, look. I mean, I pointed it out to everybody. It was, and of course, he acted like, oh, it happens all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Did he put it out with his tongue or what?
No, I had to go run over there and die.
That's funny.
Oh, boy.
Wow, that's great.
Well, thank you again.
Thank you.
God, thank I you, love Pamela. Having you so that much. Sexiest name of anybody I've ever known.
You know what my full first name is?
I wasn't even going to ask because I just love the name Sin.
I'll tell you. My full first name is Sinue.
Ah.
Which is Sinhue. And that's an Egyptian name.
Oh.
The movie that came out like in the late 50s called The Egyptian.
Yeah.
The lead character's name was Sinue.
Oh, how about that?
And my mom saw that movie in Mexico.
I just love that name.
A boy with the name Sinue. There you go.
Nice.
So, yeah.
So you didn't even have to make up the name Sin.
I get that all the time when I'm on tour. People are like, oh, what's your real name? You know, Jose. You know, I'm like, no, it's the first three letters of my name. So no stage name there.
Yay.
Yeah.
Okay. What would you like to end with? What song would you like to play?
All Along the Watchtower.
By Jimmy
or
Bob?
By Jimmy.
Okay. All right. We're going to end with Sin's Request, All Along the Watchtower. And thank you so much for listening to Pamela DeBar's Pajama Party. And Sin is here in person. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Been a pleasure. I'm going to come to one of the parties.
Okay, good. Okay, good. Yay. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you.
Must be some kind of way out of here. Say the Joker to the thief. There's too much confusion.
Wow, what a fabulous conversation. And you know, you always love a fellow who brings you flowers. He brought me a bouquet of lilies, my favorite. You know, these little stargazer lilies are the groupie flower, of course, because they're stargazers. In case you didn't get that. And I love the groupie flower. It's my favorite. And Sin brought me some of those. So thank you, Sin. And thank you so much for being on the show. It's been such a blast to have Sin Karen on the show. And I want to mention that I do have a YouTube channel. I have several new videos on there. And what I do is expand on my stories from I'm with the band and my other books. And this most recent one is about my next book, Sex, God, and Rock and Roll. Well, actually, the book after the one I'm working on. So please tune into my YouTube channel and like and subscribe. Okay, dolls, thank you for listening to Pantheon Podcast, and I'll see you on the radio.
You've been listening to Pamela DeBar's Pajama Party, produced by Aaron Alden and Christian Swain. All sound design by Jerry Danielson and Busy Signal Studios. Find Miss Pamela at Pamela DeBar on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Find all the Pantheon podcasts at pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you find great podcasts. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/pantheonpodcasts. Rock and Roll Archaeology on Instagram and Pantheon Pods on Twitter. It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.